Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A man of all sports, the Bruins and the Red Sox for Comcast Sports and CSNNE, and a co-host of the Big Show time to time, Joe Haggerty, joining us here. Joseph, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I am a friend of Eric Fried's. I have worked with Eric Fried. I know Eric Fried very well. He comes prepared with that notebook. It's just like Schilling when he's out there filling out the notebook after he used to pitch. He's always prepared, always chock full of information and ready to go. So, Frito, you're not fooling anybody. We all know you have that big full notebook ready to go.
Thank you, Joe.
We'd like to thank Joe for being our guest. Joe, we'll talk to you again soon. I mean, why go on from there? I mean, Hags, where should we start? One area before I forget, I think it was in one of your stories, and you wrote a bunch of stories since last night's game, and it's been a great source of the information trying to piece together all this stuff that happened last night. But
thanks, Rita.
Was there a player that you talked to, or was it a player speaking for the team that when the Bruins had a 3-0 lead last night, their thoughts turned to Montreal?
Yeah, somebody I had mentioned to, and it was, you know, clearly off the record conversation, but as far as the details behind it, but the sentiment was that a lot of those guys, or at least some of those guys, had already wandered towards Montreal while that game was going on. And I'm not shocked. I wasn't shocked to hear it then. I'm not shocked to hear it now. You know, that was clearly what happened in that game last night. They got up 3-0 and they eased back. They were playing with a passion and a fire and an immediacy that, you know, they weren't going to be denied in the first period. You saw it with the way they were going out. Every player was playing physical. You saw Mark Recchi go out and laying hits all over the ice, for God's sake, on one shift. And they were drawing a lot of energy from that. They scored those three goals, and then they just basically, as you see happen in hockey games quite a bit, it's inexcusable in Game 7 for it to happen, though, they eased back. They gave up. I think they thought, just like they thought the series was won, at 3-0, and I really thought they eased back on the reins as far as that goes, just kind of going off, having a good time, you know, in Philly and thinking that everything was going to take care of itself. They eased back in this game. They went into the locker room thinking, we got this one made. You know, we're in the series with Montreal. We're all set, and it came back to bite them. It's a real character check for, I think, this team going forward, that so many guys in there thought they'd had it won and just basically eased off the gas pedal when victory was in their grasp.
Game sevens are the ultimate character checks. They're different than any other games in a Stanley Cup playoff series. In an elimination game, you start playing a little differently. You don't get called for too many men on the ice. You try to do everything perfectly because you know you can't afford any mistakes. And the Flyers, if you want to count, and you should count, the final game of the regular season – plus the four games against the Bruins when they were down 3-0 at the start of it up through last night, the Flyers had played in 5 elimination games, including last night. And for the Bruins, that was their first. Is there something to that, Joe, the fact that that was the first time, because it came so easily for the Bruins, not just last night, but it came easily to them in those first 3 games of the series where they're like, you know what, we've got a couple of chances here to win this series. Whereas the Flyers had that desperate hockey mentality that is just different. I mean, you talk about flipping a switch. That's what hockey teams do when their back's against the wall.
Yeah, and I think what it was that Philly showed the character that they had. I agree with you on one level that, yes, they had faced it a couple of times, so I'm sure it didn't faze them, and it seemed to only embolden them when they fell behind in that game. And they took advantage of everything that Boston gave them, both in Game 7 and throughout the series. As Boston eased up, Philly was more than happy to oblige to jump in and take advantage of it. But in a lot of ways, I'm not going to excuse the Bruins for you know, the first time facing elimination like that, for, you know, spitting the bitter, choking a little bit when they faced all kinds of adversity this year. They should have been strengthened and hardened by all the things that had happened to them throughout the year with injuries and everything else. And a lot of these players, you know, have been there before. They were a year to the day. They had been there before against Carolina. That had happened exactly a year before the Game 7 loss to Scott Bleeping Walker, to yesterday's Game 7 loss to the Philadelphia Flyers. So many of these guys know what it takes, have played in these games before. I mean, Mark Recchi That was his eighth Game 7 last night. That was Zdeno Chara's fifth Game 7. He's 0 for 5 in Game 7, by the way. You know, a lot of these guys have played in those situations before, and it shouldn't have come as any shock to them what to expect or what happened when they played in that game. I think, plain and simple, there were problems throughout this season that you saw as far as character goes in the room, and you know, the team would ease back and relax and get back on their heels every chance they could to kick back and relax. When they got a chance and things started getting going well for the team, they couldn't handle success. You saw it throughout the year, and then you saw it again in this series. It was plain as day. You don't blow a 3-0 lead in a series and a 3-0 lead in Game 7 if you've got good character in the room and good guys that are really going for it.
Joe, you keep using the word character, which is a great jumping-off point at some point in this conversation to talk about what this locker room, what this dressing room might look like next year. But I want to bring up the leadership question, because I know it's Recky. He's played a lot in these games. The captain, there was a feeling to me that if you lose a series like this and you lose a 3-0 lead in a game, not just a series, but series and a Game 7, that leadership has a lot to do with it. As you look around that Bruins dressing room, who are the guys in your mind that are the leaders of this team that might take some of the hit for their lackluster play in the final four games of this set?
I think you've got a point a lot, too, and it's kind of unfair because he was coming back from a concussion.
Savard,
yeah. In 2 months. And he wasn't right, and he clearly was okay at the beginning of the series. He clearly wasn't right in the last four games when he was expected to fill in for David Krejci and do what Krejci was doing, and you could see he just wasn't ready to fill that kind of role. But Savard is a guy that's going to end up wearing the goat horns, I think, at least partially in this series because of that too many men on the ice penalty in Game 7. Clearly it shouldn't have gotten to that point when they're up 3-0, and it was a team-wide malaise that really took over in the second period and doomed them. But all that being said, if you're Mark Savard, you're an all-star caliber player. You're one of the best players on the team. You've played hockey your entire life. You raise your stick up and you wave it up there like you want a line change and you're calling for a line change. And then you don't go towards the bench during that line change and you continue to skate into the other end of the ice and you're just not even watching what's going on behind you. When Sobotka and the coaching staff does what they're supposed to do, get Sobotka on the ice, and all of a sudden you're called for too many men on the ice penalty. That's an inexcusable mental error and an error in judgment for a player of that caliber that late in the game. It's clearly what happened was that Savard signaled that he wanted out off the ice and, you know, wanted to cut his shift off at that point, and then immediately didn't see somebody jumping over and decided he was going to go towards the play and either forecheck or get into the zone. That's a little league, you know, that's a youth hockey play. You can't make a mistake like that in a Game 7, especially when you know the NHL has sent out a memo before the playoffs started that they're calling the too many men on the ice penalty much more strictly this year. There's been 33 too many men on the ice penalties after two rounds this year. There were only 17 in the entire playoffs last year. So you know the refs are directed to pay more attention to that. As Savard, you should know that and get the hell off the ice.
You know, the turning point, Joe, really was Game 4 in this series. If you think about it, the Bruins had every opportunity. They should have put the series away right then. And you mentioned the word complacency. Things were coming very easily for them. But when you think about the addition, the key addition and key subtraction, you go back to Game 3 for the subtraction. But when Krejci was knocked out and Gagne was added, I mean, Gagne, he wasn't at 100%. But, I mean, he obviously had the respect of his room because he's out there playing with a broken toe and certainly doing all he could to contribute. And, obviously, he was a big contributor with the game-winning goal last night. But, you know, we're not here to make excuses, but the Bruins lost two of their top six forwards through the course of this series while Gagne was added during this series. And, frankly put, the Flyers were just a better team. They needed just to be able to get off the mat in Game 4, which they did, and they were a better team than the Bruins. I mean, that's as simple as you can put it.
Yeah, once you subtracted David Krejci and Marco Sturm, but especially when David Krejci was gone in the beginning of Game 3, and then you add Simone Gagne in Game 4, the shift of power in the series was stark, and it was striking, and you could see it right away that all of a sudden the Bruins had lost a lot of their offensive power. And a guy in Krejci that does so many things on the ice that you don't even really notice until he's hurt, and they lost that when Savard was trying to fill in for him. And on the other side, you saw them all of a sudden, the Flyers, have two superpowered forward lines where the Bruins really didn't have an answer for both. They couldn't put Zdeno Chara and Johnny Boychuk on against both lines all of the time. So you either had to deal with Mike Richards and Simone Gagné and Daniel Carcillo, who were extremely effective throughout the series. And I thought Mike Richards was the best player by far on the ice. And then you also had the Danny Briere line that was also very effective. Briere, after, you know, sleepwalking through the season, has been an amazing performer offensively during the playoffs. So you couldn't possibly stop both of those. And I think the Bruins just didn't have that kind of firepower left by the point of that series when they got their injuries. They didn't have the kind of star power and the scoring power that the Flyers did. They couldn't fight them goal for goal, goal and shift for shift with those kind of players. And you saw the offense go down as soon as Krejci got hurt.
Yeah,
they went from average 3.1 goals a game when Krejci was in there during the playoffs to 2 goals a game. The power play efficiency went down. And the little things you noticed, too, where the puck movement wasn't there. David Krejci is great at finding the seams in the defense, at getting the pucks to the point, getting it to Zdeno Chara for the big slap shot. And that's partially why you saw Chara disappear offensively in the middle of that series, was because Krejci was hurt. And the effect was throughout the lineup when Krejci got hurt. And it is a big deal. And bottom line, there's issues in that room, and it was exposed. But another one of the bottom line points is that they missed David Krejci tremendously.
And it's not like the Bruins were loaded with offensive firepower heading into the playoffs to begin with. So there was not a lot left there. Joe Haggerty is our guest from CSNNE.com. This question will help start the conversation turning towards next year a little bit. Goaltending turned out to be a push at the end of this series. Remarkably enough, when you're talking about Michael Layton versus Tuukka Rask, but Tuukka gave up a couple of soft goals last night, did not make that big save. Layton made a big save that is kind of lost in all this talk about, oh, the Bruins choked and all this, but Savard got off a pretty good shot between the circles right in the slot in the third period, and Layton was there for it. Tuukka ran out of steam. I mean, he ran out of gas, it seemed, and that was something we all feared, but there was really nothing you could do about it, Joe. You couldn't throw Tim Thomas out there in game four. You couldn't do anything like that. Tuukka was your guy, but he had, and we've talked about this before, whether it was in Finland or for the P Bruins or with Boston on the at the NHL level, he hadn't played this much before. So it was almost one of those things where you hoped wouldn't happen, but I'm not surprised that it did happen that he ran out of gas.
No, I'm not either. And, you play in Finland, you play in the AHL, the playoff schedule's much different, and the regular season schedule's much different. You're not playing every other day, and it's not that grind like the Stanley Cup playoffs become. And you saw it at points in the series. You saw it in Game 5 against Buffalo in that first round, and you saw it in the latter parts of the second series against the Flyers, that there was definitely some fatigue creeping into Tuukka's game, and it did affect him a little bit. I wouldn't say he was terrible in Game 7. I thought there were a lot of redirected pucks and a lot of, you know, funky bounces and bounces off defensemen and things like that. You know, so I'm not going to say it was totally his fault, but do I think a fresh Tuukka Rask makes one or two of those saves? Absolutely, I think he does. So it definitely affected him, and I think that's a focus going forward, and it was a worry and a concern the Bruins had going into this year, is that physically he wouldn't be able to withstand the real grind of a full load of a starting goaltender, and it's why they kept going back to Tim Thomas. But I will say this, there were a couple guys out there, Steve Conroy was one of them from the Boston Herald, and you end up, when you're a hockey reporter, having a lot of friends around in Massachusetts in the hockey world, and John Mazzori, a guy that's a coach at Winchester High, texted me a couple days ago, and they both were saying the same thing. Maybe you should have rested Tuukka in Game 6, gone with Tim Thomas to give him a rest, and then if you lose Game 6, you've got nothing to lose. Tim Thomas went in there and you know, you gave him a chance to stand in his head and try to steal a game, and then you have a refreshed Tuukka Rask in Game 7. I didn't agree with it at the time. I thought it would be showing lack of confidence and maybe a panic move by the coaching staff to do something like that. But you know what? Maybe if they had done that, things would be a little different. We'll never know. But, you know, our job is all about second-guessing and looking at stuff in hindsight, and it's a pretty interesting point when you think about it.
Well, you bring up the other goaltender, Tim Thomas. Eric mentioned earlier what kind of cap situation this team is, and I would not pretend to know exactly the details of how hard up against that salary cap they're going to be, Joe, but you're paying $5 million to a guy in Tim Thomas that doesn't appear to be the number one guy here anymore for the Boston Bruins. Will there be a process and an exploration of trying to deal Tim Thomas? And in your mind, is he back with the Bruins next year?
No, I don't think so. I think he's going to waive his no trade over the summer to go somewhere where he's going to play. I think the writing is on the wall for him in Boston, and that he knows that the future and the present is Tuukka Rask. and then he's going to be playing a lot next year. And I think he's going to want to go to a place where he can play, you know, and I think it speaks to his competitive nature. It's the kind of guy he is. I think the question becomes, where does he go and who wants him, and is he going to kind of try to direct where he can go via the no-trade clause that he has? Because there's clearly going to be some teams that are going to be at least poking around looking for goaltenders. You know, teams like Washington, teams like Philly, maybe a team like the Chicago Blackhawks. I think there's going to be four or five teams, you know, maybe even San Jose with maybe Nabokov not being there as a free agent, maybe going somewhere else. But I think there's going to be a few different teams out there that might be interested in Tim Thomas's services. I think you probably have to take on a bad contract to ship out a bad contract with him and take on somebody else's issue. But maybe if it's a forward that's underachieving but, you know, still has something left in the tank, you're willing to do it if you're a team like Boston that has trouble scoring goals. But either way, I don't think you can tie up that kind of money in goaltender if he's a backup, and you've got to try to find a way to move him. The other issue and problem with that is that you're going to have Marty Turco out there looking for a job as a free agent. You're going to have Tomas Vokoun as a free agent from Florida, who is another guy that's going to be out there looking for a job. So it's not like there's going to be no other options for these teams to have a goaltender. So the question becomes, how much interest is there going to be out there for Tim Thomas? But I think the Bruins are going to try to move heaven and earth and do everything they can to trade him. And I think Michael Ryder is another guy that you might see them try to move as well in the final year of his deal. They want to try to clear cap space. There's no question about it.
I'll drive Ryder to the airport. Is that all right? I mean, no one was more surprised than me with how he played in Buffalo, but that guy was nowhere in the regular season. And right. he was nowhere until, last night when he scored a goal. As we continue and we wrap up here with you, Joe Haggerty, looking towards next year, does somebody behind the bench or in the front office have to take some sort of fall for what happened in this series? Or do you think Claude Julien is back? Do you think Peter Chiarelli is back? Do you think anything has to happen? Can this team turn the page, overuse statement, but you understand what I'm saying, just turn the page and kind of put that behind them? Or does something need to happen because this was such a historic, epic failure that something has to change when it comes to how the team is managed or how the team is coached?
Yeah, you know, I think obviously Peter Chiarelli is going to be safe. I think he put a lot of the pieces in place. I mean, granted, he didn't bring anybody on board to replace Phil Kessel, and it was a problem source for them all season long. But I think that's gonna be dealt with this offseason during the draft when they bring in a Taylor Hall or a Tyler Seguin, and they're gonna get somebody with some offensive firepower, a real young gun, talented guy that's gonna make them a better offensive team. They won't be as hard up for goals next year as they were this year. And I think otherwise, you know, the Dennis Seidenberg trade was a good one. You can't blame them for the injuries that happened. That's just attrition in hockey, and it happens to everybody. And I think a lot of the pieces were in place. And I think the fact that they got to the seventh game of the second round shows that, despite all the stuff that happened to them this year. But, the coaching end of it, I don't know. I think it's a good question. I think there's going to be some blame leveled on the coaching staff for the too many men on the ice, even though I think clearly Mark Savard had plenty of culpability there. And just the fact that they were at the helm of a team that ran into the rocks when they were up 3-0 in the series, I think there is going to be a lot of fury out there, and there's going to be a lot of talk about fire Claude Julien and whether his job is safe. I don't necessarily think that that's justified, and I don't necessarily think that the Bruins will do that. I mean, he's just starting the first year of a multi-year contract extension next year, and they're going to have to eat a lot of money in a lot of years to make a move, simply because they choked in a series. I don't know that they do that. I don't think this is a Grady Little type cut and dry situation where that guy was the problem and you can point to him as being the issue. But I have a feeling it's going to be looked at, though, because I think at times this year, motivating the players and getting the most out of them and really pushing their buttons was an issue for Julien and his staff, and they didn't get the most out of this team at points in the year. And I think that reflects on the coaching staff a little bit, and I think that's something that's going to be evaluated by Chiarelli. Do I think he gets fired? No, but I think the heat is going to be turned up a little bit on him this summer and going into next year for sure.
Joe, last one for me. Give us a pick in terms of the Eastern Conference Final here. You've got Philadelphia and Montreal. It's going to be tough for a lot of diehard Bruins fans to watch, although I did hear somebody call this station today and say they were jumping on the Montreal bandwagon. I want no part of it. Joe Hags. Who do you like in the Eastern Conference Final to represent the East for a Stanley Cup?
See, that's the problem. It's flashbacks to like when they were rooting for Montreal in that Game 7 against Pittsburgh, and then in Washington in the first round. I think Bruins fans are getting a little confused around here. I pick Montreal. I think they're a team of destiny. I think they've got something going on that's special. I am a huge, longtime basher of Hal Gill, but he's won me over the last couple of years. The way he's played in this playoff, he's played like a man possessed.
He's played great.
Shots all over the place, shutting down the best offensive line on the other team. You got to take your hat off to Hal Gill. He's truly become the player the Bruins thought they had when they drafted him. He wasn't that here, but he's become that guy. And then out in West, let's just say up is down is up, left is right, and the world has gone kablooey. And Joe Thornton's going to get the Stanley Cup Finals, and you're going to have Canadians versus Sharks. And I'll give it to Jumbo Joe, because everything that I picked to seem to happen this year is not happening. So.
It's bizarre. Expert, he's going Bizarro Joe. He's going Bizarro Joe with the picks. I like that.
Hey,
you know what? I had just heard from Pierre LeBrun that they just had a press conference out west, and somebody had asked Joe Thornton what he thought about the Bruins choking, and his reaction was, "Who cares?" So there you go. That's what Joe really feels
about. Joe. Hey, Hags, are you heading to a golf course right now? I mean, that's what happens when hockey season ends.
No, I'm going to be heading to Fenway Park next week for some games or Yankee Stadium, and then I'll be at the park all summer doing my Red Sox thing. I'm all by sports. Well, Frito, you
yeah,
know
oh, I know full well. We expect to have you on regularly.
Loud and proud,
here.
He'll say it. He's by sports.
Stop by our Fenway studio, Joe, and come by. We'll buy the coffee.
No doubt, and I will be covering the draft, the NHL awards, and I might even go up to Montreal and do a feel good Hal Gill feature over the next week.
Wow!
Most of the time, it's going to be baseball. Other than that,
Joe, appreciate the time, my friend. Great job with the coverage this year. We'll talk some baseball very soon.
Awesome, sounds good, guys, and doing a great job too. I love listening to you guys.
Thanks, Hags.
There he is. He's the one, Joe Haggerty, joining us here, Mutt and Fried Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.